for the first time, and I hope that this is the first of any number of visits that you will pay to the morning show with you and your colleagues to talk about your important work.
Thank you. I'd enjoy that. Thanks.
Dr. Jeffrey Weiss, the new superintendent of Kenosha Unified School District, our guest today on the morning show here on WGTD.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard Saturday mornings at 10:30 here on WGTD. Archive programs are available on our website at WGTD.org.
This is WGTD HD, serving Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College, and Jenny Tunkies, former reporter for the Kenosha News and a former chief of staff for the Kenosha County Executive. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
This is Jenny Tunkies, and welcome to Community Matters. You're listening to WGTD HD 91.1. And I am pleased today to have as my guests the leaders of Kenosha, otherwise known as LOK.
Yeah,
and we'll find out about the details on the name and how the organization came together. It's a conduit for social, transformative, and restorative justice in Kenosha, the state of Wisconsin, and the United States. So I'm going to ask each of my guests to introduce themselves, tell us a little about themselves. Erica.
Hi, thank you so much, Jenny, for the awesome introduction and for having us here today. So we're very excited to tell our story and kind of talk about all of the work of Leaders of Kenosha, or sometimes we go by LOK, in the community. My name is Erica Ness. I'm the Director of Community Engagement with LOK. I'm from Kenosha. I have a background in community organizing and social justice work at the local and international level. And I was living in a few different places, but brought back to Kenosha during the pandemic and was here right during the shooting of Jacob Blake Jr. by police officer Rustin Chesky, which kind of catapulted my journey into activism and my work with LOK.
Great. Thank you. Ariel.
Hi, I'm Ariel Crowder. I'm the Director of Digital Media for Leaders of Kenosha, so I do all the social media fun stuff. But yeah, I got involved back in 2020 doing a lot of voter registration by myself, and found some amazing role models, including Erica, who's with me, to help guide me, figure out how I can help the community better and where my resources best fit. And we formed LOK, and here I am. So it's going good.
And one of your executive director couldn't be here today, but do you want to mention a little bit about Tanya?
Yes, definitely. So Tanya McLean, she's our executive director and the founder of the organization, as well as a major leader in activist circles here in Kenosha, Wisconsin. LOK exists because of her, and because of her leadership and her incredible work building partnerships and advocating for racial and social justice in our community.
Great.
She's an educator and a therapist by background, and is just an incredible person that's able to connect with people across communities and really stand up for what's right. And we're really lucky to kind of be working under her leadership.
Great. So tell me the origin story of Leaders of Kenosha, and either one of you can start.
Yeah, definitely. So Leaders of Kenosha, kind of the first sort of rumblings. I mean, the name came many months after our work started. There was a collective, and still remains a strong collective of activists that began hosting demonstrations after George Floyd was killed by police in Minneapolis. Tanya McLean, our executive director, helped organize the Kneel for Nine that took place in Civic Center Park. And there were many sort of protests and infrastructure that had been building for a long time, but especially building during the sort of surge in the racial justice movement in the summer of 2020. And there was sort of a lack of organizational leadership in some of these early protests at the time. A lot of activists coming together, organizing, very grassroots, but not so much of a kind of concrete presence, a place to, you know, organize funds, organize events and things like that. And then when Jacob Blake Jr. was shot by Officer Rustin Chesky of the Kenosha Police Department, things sort of erupted in Kenosha right away. Our executive director, Tanya McLean, was, you know, at the scene alongside a lot of other community leaders and activists and business owners and family members trying to figure out, you know, what was going on after that shooting. People didn't know if he had survived. People were very upset. The police, I was not there that night. I was trying to take a hiatus from social media. And so I didn't.
It was a strange time to do it.
It was about 1 a.m. when all of these, when the curfew went into, maybe not 1 a.m., but 11 p.m., midnight, when the curfew went into effect. And I was like, what is going on? And my sister I was with was like, oh, didn't you hear? And I was like, well, don't you think I would have mentioned it based on all my interests if I'd heard? But anyway, so I got involved on day two. But Tanya was there.
Did you know you had met previously through the other organic coming together?
Yes. So I had met Tanya at the Kneel for Nine, as well as some of the other activists that we work closely with. We work with a coalition of activists, including Kyle Flood and Kyle Johnson, Diamond Hartwell, and a variety of people that have been leading protests at the time. And Ariel Crowder was there. You know, Ariel sitting next to me was there, you know, advocating for voting rights. As we know, you know, getting involved in elections is very crucial to determining who's in positions of power when situations like this happen. So the police, according to what I've heard from everyone who was there, the police started acting very aggressive. Things started getting out of hand. Tanya McLean, if she was here now, she would be, you know, telling you how she spent all night on her bike going from store to store to try to protect places from being burned down or vandalized, as were all the activists. I've heard many activists say time and time again they did not recognize the people, you know, that were doing the vandalism. I know there's talks of, was it people from out of town? Was it, people that were planted? You know, there's a lot of different perspectives on what happened and kind of who was behind that. Was it people that were just rightfully very angry? There's a spectrum of kind of opinions on what was going on. But Tanya and all the other activists were there protecting communities. And then, of course, the next day, while most resources were going towards downtown, Tanya was helping alongside a lot of other leaders lead the charge to protect uptown. And even as all the plywood boards were gone from every store because they were being used to board up downtown, you know, Tanya and other activists were traveling, you know, far to help board things up. There were in uptown and other affected areas that weren't being as focused on yet, and, you know, providing food, shelter, collecting, you know, resources. The following day, there was a, you know, meeting of all the different activists, as there had been prior to this, during all the protests, related to George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and all of the other police shootings and killings that had been going on in our country. There was, you know, another meeting called after Jacob Blake was shot, and figuring out what to do and what was next. And then that is when Jacob Blake Sr., his father, his uncle Justin Blake, who we've worked very closely with and has been very involved in leading a lot of our events and protests, as well as other family members, came to town. And I just sort of, personally, I met Tanya. I recognized she was an incredible leader. She was leading the movement. I asked what I could do. I had a bit of background in media, so I was collecting business cards of all of the people that were interviewing each of the activists and trying to facilitate more connections to better tell the story of what was going on, because there was a narrative that activist equals person burning down the city, not activist equals person protecting the city while advocating for reforms, while getting people fed and all the things that I saw everybody doing and participated in doing. And then Jacob Blake's family is largely from Northern Illinois, so in Evanston. So as they in Chicago, and as they were, you know, planning a lot of, you know, that first giant march that brought thousands of people to Kenosha, a lot of their connections and resources were coming from Illinois. And so a few activists, including Tanya and myself, asked, like, well, what about a social media presence? What about Kenosha? Like, do you want our support in helping you connect with organizations and people in Kenosha? They said, yes, make a Facebook page. We sat there in Regiment's Barber Collective. The day it opened, the day Jacob Blake Jr. was shot, Alvin Owens, the owner's birthday, became our headquarters from that point forward. We created the Justice for Jacob Facebook page, and at the direction of Jacob Blake Sr. and Justin Blake, started talking about what all events were going on. So that's kind of, and then from that day forward, I spent every single day with Tanya and soon Olivia Crudup, our former director of communications, joined the team. There were other activists that joined the team. Ariel was there, you know, at every single event working with us, and soon became an integral part of Locke's team as well. And then as different political pressures happened, the president at the time came to town, which we felt like would inflame divisions. We hosted a block party on the block where Jacob was shot. And then from that point, we were doing an event almost every other day, marching, advocating for police reform, advocating for racial justice in Kenosha, advocating for people to elect individuals who would promote an improved relationship between the police and the community, in which community members would not fear to be harmed or potentially killed by police officers.
And so, Ariel, how did you get involved? So,
yeah, so back in 2020, like, I had quit my job because of COVID, so I was just, like, a stay-at-home, hanging out with my cats and all that fun stuff, just relaxing. But, like, all the craziness in the country was so prominent, I just couldn't ignore it. And so I'm like, what is, like, a good way for me to be helpful but, like, don't need a team? I can just do it, like, by myself. And I saw this article online of this football team who went and registered to vote after a game and kind of, like, got their community come and do that as well. And so I'm like, why is that not at, like, every major event where a bunch of people keep showing up? Like, that should be a thing. So I just started finding people who are hosting events. And I'm like, hey, can I come set up here and I'll register whoever you want? Just bring them up. And so I started doing that by myself. And then, like, more when Jacob Blake got shot, was more prominent for me to find who were the actual leaders in Kenosha and who I could follow and, like, help get some blueprints of where I should be going and what I can do to help everyone. And so that's when I met Tanya McLean, and I think it was at one of the major meetings that Erica was talking about where they gathered all the activists together to try and figure out what we could do. And I remember seeing you there, and I'd seen you before, and I'm just like, I know you, but I don't know you, and I feel like I should because I've seen you enough. And yeah, I talked to Tanya. I'm like, I'm here to help. Like, what can I do? And, like, I've been part of the team. Like, it was a slow move into it, but then I was, like, part of it, and here I am. And, like, I've been enjoying ever since and getting amazing, amazing leadership skills out of these amazing women I've been working with. So,
that's wonderful.
But, yeah, we're still advocating for registering to vote and getting out the vote. You gotta make your voice heard and use your vote to change the world.
Absolutely. And we're going to talk about voting a little bit more. Tell me how you settled on the name Leaders of Kenosha. And I'm sorry, I called it LOK. That just shows
that
you how
also,
non-hip I am. So, Locke.
A lot of people call it LOK. We go by Leaders of Kenosha. We go by Locke. Locke's kind of our standard. LOK, a lot of people call that too. Someone called it Loke a couple days ago.
Oh,
and
no.
I was like, okay, not that one. No, that's
not
that.
It.
But LOK, we also go by LOK, so no worries.
So, how did you settle on that as a name?
Yeah. So once we started planning events, demonstrations, protests, community cleanups, every day, you know, starting in late August, or every day, every other day. It might have been every day. We kind of settled into, I would say, a lot of different sort of teams of activists that focus on different things. Everybody had different skills, and so we worked, with some teams on certain issues and certain events and other teams on others, and people sort of settled into different coalitions with different focuses on whether that be reducing gun violence or meeting community needs. And our focus has really, we found our place in, you know, civic engagement and advocating for more people to become involved in our community and take leadership roles in our community. Mm-hmm. So we went by a couple different acronyms. First, we went by nothing, but then no one knew who we were. And like I had said before, there's a little bit of a vacuum because suddenly all these resources were attempting to be poured into Kenosha, but there wasn't necessarily a conduit to get them out to people, especially electoral resources, because obviously in 2020 many statewide and national organizations were focused on the upcoming presidential election. So for us, we went through a few acronyms here and there, and then as our team kind of finally settled with Tanya McLean, myself, Ariel, and Olivia Crudup, who's still involved, but at that time was director of communications. Olivia, we were kind of going through, coming up with acronyms with Alvin in the back of the collective, as we often did at that time, spurring ideas. And I think we came up with the acronym first, LOCK, and like Kenosha, and like how we're like a lock, locking together.
Yeah, we're locking
and
in.
And then Olivia, our director of communications, rightfully so, came up with the name Leaders of Kenosha. And there is a little bit of a fear that people will think, oh, they think they're the leaders? Like, what is that? But the the purpose is that our philosophy really stems around that everyone in Kenosha can and should be a leader and should have equitable access to becoming a leader in the ways that they see fit. And right now, especially for communities of color, people living in certain neighborhoods like Uptown, there are so many more barriers for people to vote, to go to community meetings, to run for office, to be heard. And actually the people most being affected by some of these issues, such as racism, structural oppression, continue to have some of the least opportunities to actually make a change and make the decisions that would lead us to seeing the reforms that we need. So really at the core, the core of our work and all of our advocacy campaigns and our civic engagement, we are wanting to make sure everyone in Kenosha is empowered to be a leader. And we think that when everyone is empowered to be a leader, we will see the reforms that we need in order to make sure everybody has the opportunities that they're looking for.
Great. And that's what I like about your name. I think that is the signal it sends is,
well,
that everyone can be a leader.
Exactly.
And the world is run by those who show up.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. When you come together and work together toward a goal, you're going to see change, right? So yes, you can. Everybody's a leader if you show up and do something, right? So
yeah, and it's important to make sure that everybody can show up and do
absolutely
something.
Yeah, so let's talk about now elections have been a focus. Tell me about some of the events you've held, and let's talk a little bit about those barriers to voting. Why it seems like it to me, people get all excited when they say, oh, wow, we've had a 32% turnout because that's big. And that's like, wow, no, that's horrible.
Right. Math, that is terrible.
Terrible. I used to work as a reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and I helped host some foreign journalists who came in during a presidential election right before. They came in, I believe it was August, and they were shocked at the lack of presence of election signs and just no presence at all of the election. They said, wow, in our countries, people would be handing out flyers and there'd be a lot of events around voting and talking about voting.
Right.
So let's talk a little bit about that, about the barriers to voting and some of the things you're doing to try to reduce that.
I would say, one of the major problems that I've found being out is nobody knows that there's an election between presidential elections. Like, no one's aware of those things. And it's really unfortunate because I feel like we try so hard as, a society to get these types of races known, but a lot of it is through social media, and a lot of people may not have access to that because they might not have a house to go home to or internet to connect to. So it's just a major barrier that I've found personally, that no one just is aware of what's going on. So that's one I can think of offhand.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it's a combination of a feeling that either a feeling that, oh, my vote doesn't matter, or it doesn't matter that much, or it's hard for me to see the ways it might matter, but it's hard for me to figure out how it does, combined with all the steps and barriers to voting. And why would you you know, if you're working all day, why would you try to find a time to go vote, figure out who everybody is, and navigate all of these different websites, especially at the local level? It's very hard to figure out who the candidates are. Why would you do, you know, figure out, can I vote if I just moved? Can I vote if I had a felony and I'm not on papers anymore? Can I vote, you know, what, am I registered? Am I not? Can I register the day of? It really is a lot of steps to figure out who are your options, what all of these positions do, and how do you actually get to the ballot to vote? And if you already believe that your vote doesn't matter that much, why would you go through all of the work to make it happen? So for us, really breaking down those barriers by bringing information and voter registration opportunities to different communities, both, not just both. In 2020, among all of our marches where we were, you know, speaking out and talking to people about getting out to vote and how we can make a change in the way that our communities are run by voting, we also were doing voter registration tables in different neighborhoods, you know, in Kenosha, neighborhoods that aren't seen, you know, as much attention as others. I mean, political parties and candidates are so focused on what are the neighborhoods that are going to come out. We don't want to waste our time. It's not cost effective for us to, quote unquote, waste our time in these neighborhoods if they've never voted before. So there's a need for organizations like ours to go to places that are being ignored and are being given up on and are, again, oftentimes in a lower socioeconomic status, so much more affected by the policy outcomes of who gets elected. To actually go there, go door to door. We did a very interesting door-to-door, COVID-safe door-to-door campaign in 2020 where we asked people how they felt about police reform in addition to talking to them about voting. We had voter registration tables, and then once it was too late to register early, voter information tables in all the different neighborhoods. And then we've continued. Our work has shifted a little bit. You know, as in December 2020, we officially organized as a 501c3. And our work is, you know, all nonpartisan, not advocating for any candidates, but rather a set of issues that we've seen feedback that are important to people in Kenosha, especially in areas that aren't getting as much attention. But being able to go, you know, into neighborhoods outside of stores, on corners of, you know, different blocks, at different events, community events and block parties, and talking to people about voting, what their rights are, getting them registered, where they can go, when, and how they can get information on all of the candidates. So we've had strategies from doors, tables, concerts,
rallies,
marches. All kind of focused on voting. And, you know, we're seeing an increase in barriers right now. Drop boxes being taken away from neighborhoods, opportunities for early voting being limited in some cases. So it's even more important than ever that we really get the word out and really have real conversations with people about it's really real and makes a lot of sense that you think your vote doesn't matter. That is not an unfounded belief. People have, even people that work really hard and vote and get people to vote, are disappointed by the people that they work to elect. And you can go into like big tent politics and all these different reasons for that. But really there is a reason that people feel that way. But the more of us we can get to be engaged, the more that we can really make that change. And especially at the local level, like these races are being won by a handful of votes. Absolutely. And there's a handful of votes total. So if a neighborhood like, if a neighborhood can kind of get together and kind of convene that knowledge and that belief that it matters and get their family members and their neighbors all out to vote, they could change the outcome. And especially if one of those neighbors who has never, you know, run before runs and actually has that lived experience, the needs of that neighborhood could have a much stronger voice. And if we see that scaled, we could see real changes and real reform in the community.
Absolutely. So this is WGTD HD 91.1 Community Matters, and we're talking today to leaders of Kenosha and some of the work that they're doing around election education and turnout. It is very difficult to get information out about, especially as you point out, about local elections. Tell me Ariel, about some of the events that you've held. You talked about some rallies and...
Yeah. So a goal that we made as a team probably around mid-September was that in October until up to the election, so like a solid 8-9 weeks, we wanted to have at least 2 voter registration events per week. Mm-hmm. Just all over Kenosha. So we partner a lot with Grace Lutheran Church, which is off of 60th Street, but they're also Grace Welcome Center that hands out food every Tuesday to families who are in need of food. But we've been partnering with them, and we stand outside at our table while the line of people who walk up get their food, and we get to talk to them and help them engage with what's going on. And sometimes it's a good reaction, sometimes it's not so good, but it's at least getting people to talk about it. So that is like more the major point for me mm-hmm. than anything, because if you're not talking about it, you're not thinking about it, and then you won't worry about it. But then if you want something done, you're going to have to help make that change. So but yeah, we've done a lot of pop-up registrations. We've partnered with so many different organizations all over the city of Kenosha that have just wanted our presence there as another helpful tool for people to understand. Like, we've been involved in a lot of community cleanups. Let me think. There's just been so much. I don't know if I can name it all. Trunk or Treat. Yeah, that was one that we just did recently,
concerts.
And that was a lot of fun. Trying to get the kids more excited about it, starting off early. Another cool thing that we were more of supportive, but we weren't all there to help out, but the Urban League of Racine and Kenosha, they put on a voting simulation so people could go and pretend like they were voting so they understand the process when they go there and they're not intimidated by that whole thing. So that was a super cool thing that we supported, but we weren't all able to be there, but it was still a really good opportunity for people to get more information on what they're doing. And we're also holding an event on Saturday from 2 to 5, which is more...
And that's today.
That's today, yes, from 2 to 5. We're focusing on voting, but also just trying to get families out to enjoy the weather while it's still beautiful, and have free food for kids, bouncy houses, all that fun stuff. But we're also like, we would appreciate if you went and vote because it would help your situation.
Right,
so.
Right. And this is where will that be held?
That's going to be on the block of 28th Street between Washington and 41st.
Okay.
So.
Which I believe, and it's called, it's the
Justice for Jacob.
Justice for Jacob
block party.
Okay, great. Yeah. And so I want to ask you both of you a question related, since you leaders of Kenosha came together during the civil unrest, and actually prior, but kind of solidified around the shooting of Jacob Blake. A lot, you know, in a nonpartisan look, however, at all of the advertising, both local and national, I'd really like to get your take. I mean, there's been a lot of political flyers showing Kenosha burning, things surrounding that. What is your reaction to that? What do you think the reaction to that is in the community?
It's definitely very disappointing to see Kenosha become such a strong and frankly effective political tool for candidates both locally and statewide, and even in some cases nationally, to get elected based on a rhetoric of fear, an idea that Kenosha was burned to the ground, and that certain candidates or political parties or people in office, you know, are at fault and didn't do anything about it. And if you elect other people, then we're going to make sure that there's an extreme level of law and order that prevent anything like that from happening again. That's the narrative I'm seeing, and that I think is a completely false narrative. No, I know it's a very false narrative, because we were there. We saw, you know, the antagonistic methods that police, the National Guard and others use that riled up crowds, that, you know, whether it was tear gas or rubber bullets, you know,
machine.
Yeah. Yeah, we saw, you know, medics targeted by rubber bullets. We saw a lot of tactics that were extremely upsetting, and in our experience, is what caused the uprising and some of the fires and things like that to escalate. We worked very hard in a peaceful manner to keep people protesting. We have Locke has a really has had from the beginning and still has a strong relationship with the Kenosha Police Department. They're aware that we think they should change some things. Mm-hmm. So we're not on the same page, but we have a strong working and respectful relationship. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, and for us, we've worked really hard to facilitate people's opportunities to advocate for what their beliefs are and advocate for change and advocate for an end to police violence, gun violence in general, which is a huge issue in Kenosha. And we've watched things be peaceful and then turn not so peaceful once everybody was being shot with rubber bullets and tear gas. So mm-hmm. in my opinion, and from my experience, and I don't like to speak for anyone, but I've heard so many other community members and activists say the same thing, it was that law and order presence which started the flames of the fire that caused so much burning in Kenosha. And those days that we were passing out food or rebuilding or talking about having hard conversations and talking about what to do next, you know, we know which elected officials and which candidates were there and what they were doing. And in some cases across political parties, people did not do a great job supporting activists, but in some cases they did. But it definitely was not the law and order mentality and folks that were helping calm things down and find solutions that, you know, caused a lot more destruction and pain for members of the community. So it's challenging to watch because I would hate to see things like that happen again. Unfortunately, we are in a place where the backlash to the movement for police reform has been very strong, and a lot of candidates across political parties are advocating for more funding to police, are kind of shying away from the calls for police reform that happened in 2020. And unfortunately, I strongly believe that that will contribute to more police shootings in the future. Hopefully not in Kenosha, but we saw it happen here. It could happen anywhere. And this philosophy of law and order and the candidates that are running on this law and order and this look, Kenosha burned down, they are not advocating for implementing strategies that will work for peaceful solutions. And Kenosha is here. Businesses have been very resilient. People have been very resilient. It's so horrible that Jacob Blake was shot and the pain that him and his family have gone through. It was so horrible, the pain of the families that lost their businesses from, you know, what happened to that uprising. But at the same time, the amount of resilience and care and the strength of the community that was showcased during all of, you know, the entire uprising has been unmatched in my experience and the experience of many others. So to call everything that happened in Kenosha a travesty and something that, you know, needs to be met with force is just incorrect, because the force is what made it go bad in the first place, and the community love and support is what, you know, made everything kind of come to all the fires and things like that come to an end, and a strong call for changes in Kenosha emerge, you know, out of everything.
Right. Ariel, anything you want to add to that?
I mean, hit it right on the nail for me for most of it. I would say personally, seeing ads that very much target what happened to Kenosha in those very short few weeks of craziness really misrepresents us as a whole and really tarnishes our name for the world. Like, like Erica said, there's people out there that think Kenosha is just a desert from because everything burned down. And it's like, that's not what happened in the slightest. Like, right. Things happened, but we rebuilt, we healed, we're regrouping each other and trying to get back on our feet and really just be the community we need to show the world that it needs to represent, you know? Like, we just...
Absolutely.
We are a good example of how to turn things around, so I'm hoping we can continue with that.
Right, and with your positive leadership and focus on leaders of Kenosha, there's a lot of good things happening. So what, Ariel, what will you deem successful for turnout on Tuesday in the election? What will make you feel like some of the election work you've been doing has been successful?
That is a great question, because we don't really have a scale to determine that, and I did not personally keep track of how many people I registered to vote, but...
Sounds like a lot, then.
it was a decent amount, I would say. My goal is that people are able to bring others that they know and encourage others to come and vote with them, because I feel like the whole, you can go vote by yourself, but if you're not promoting it within your circle and people around you, then you're not really doing your civic duty. Like, you can make your vote count, but if it's just the one that you're providing, it's just not as much as you could be doing. And if you're going to be mad about something that you could help change, how about you help convince people to go that direction with you or not and just get their opinion seen so you can both talk about it at the end? Like, not everything has to be an argument, and it seems to be the way people like to go, which is not personally my way. And, like, I will listen to you, but I don't need to tell you you're wrong for me to feel better, you know? Mm-hmm. So
right.
So I'm just hoping it's a good partnership of people bringing their friends to the polls. So
good.
Yeah.
Through this process, are there things about the registration or the voting process that you think could make a difference? Some changes that could be made? Anything that's been obvious? I've always wondered, for example, why does it have to only be Tuesday? I know there's early voting. But then it gets, I have heard there are other communities where you can vote on a Saturday and Sunday, but I don't know.
So a lot of the voting is determined by the, like, city and county clerks of your districts. So they're the ones that call the shots on early voting hours and all that. And we've actually worked really close with our city clerk, Michelle, this year specifically, because they were going in and out of hiring people and finding the right person. And she's actually done it before, so she's just an amazing person to have the job in general. But, we've been working with her a lot. And it's very much the people who need to talk to their government officials and local elected officials to determine what they think their community needs, because we definitely saw a need for extended hours in early voting, because it's only from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. and people work till 5 or 6, so it's hard to do that. And so one of the goals we did meet this year was extending one of the one day per the 2 weeks that are early voting that got an extended hour of like 3 extra hours, so it's open till 7 p.m. So that was like a cool goal that we met, that is trying to be helpful, but it's really different all across the board. Mm-hmm. So you just have to do your research and find the right people.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I still think, if people were able to vote on the weekends and if hours could be extended even more, obviously that would be better. People, especially in Kenosha, with the... job market that we have, a lot of people don't work, 9 to 5. So having flexible hours is definitely something that we've improved but would like to see continue to improve in the future. I think that the information on how to, I think that a lot of like our county and city websites do a pretty good job of laying out the information of what you need to vote, but distributing that information could go a much longer way, I think.
I agree.
In a much more clear way. And I think that, again, especially with these local offices, I think that there needs to be a better job of distributing candidate information. A lot of people, if it's in the newspaper, a lot of people don't get the newspaper anymore. there, you know, there needs to be perhaps, like I said, there's targeted lists of, you know, people who get flyers about the different candidates mm-hmm. from one party or another, but a stronger, more comprehensive list of not only the candidates, but what each position actually does, distributed in mass, in different, not just social media, but in person and at different, you know, community like centers.
On a post or something.
And it doesn't have to be a lot of words, because, right, that can be overwhelming. Yeah. Right. But that can be overwhelming as well. But just a really... a stronger strategic initiative for people to know kind of what's at stake, and you know what's needed to be able to get out there and vote.
Mm-hmm. So, going forward post election, and you're working in a lot of areas, providing resources, education, encouraging civic engagement. Tell me a few of the organization's goals for the future. What else would you like to accomplish?
Yeah, well, in the summer, or maybe late spring, we launched our Kenosha Community Bail Fund. So we have a bail fund now that you can access at our website at leadersofkenosha.org and get information on, you know, on our Facebook and other social media, Leaders of Kenosha on Facebook, Leaders Kenosha on Instagram and Twitter. And that bail fund, there is a form you can fill out for a loved one, and we bail out people of color at their request, up to a certain limit and excluding certain what one might call violent crimes. So for us, expanding the reach of that bail fund, getting more you know, funding for it, mm-hmm. As well as more awareness about it and about that resource is a huge goal for us. We've kind of gone through the probationary period where it was okay that we had, you know, less users because we can, you know, really make sure that everybody's getting what they need in efficient time. But now we're ready to really have that fully rolled out and have people know about it, so that not being able to pay cash bail is not... a barrier to people being able to continue to pay their bills, do their job, take care of their families as they figure out what to do after they've faced, you know, an arrest. So that's a huge goal of ours. We've had a lot of campaigns since we started. Obviously, we started with our Justice for Jacob campaign. That was kind of our informal first title in a way. So we... you know, we're continuing to advocate for police and legal reforms in Kenosha, including an end to cash bail, including getting more voter access for people in detention facilities. So we're looking at that and just kind of continuing to partner with other organizations with similar social justice-minded goals.
You know, I would say, just to add to that, personal goal is I'm really hoping to get more amplification of people wanting to carry on this legacy for us when we'll somehow maybe not be here to carry it on. Just to have some more people who are motivated like we are and passionate about the community and wanting to make it a better place. So growing as an organization would be a very major goal for me, person-wise.
growing our volunteer base. Yeah. You can also sign up to volunteer at our website, and kind of growing our sort of collective that is Leaders of Kenosha.
Great. So remind everyone about the event later today.
Yes. So later today at 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. over on 28th Avenue between Washington Road and 40th Street, we will be holding a block party, Justice for Jacob block party, that will include free food and bouncy houses for children and just a few games and all that fun stuff. Oh, and there is a best dress costume contest. So you have one more chance to dress up for Halloween.
Okay. Yeah. And then are you doing anything on Election Day that people should be aware of?
Yes. We are holding a election watch party over at Gordon's Sports Bar. I believe it's on 7th Street? 6th. 6th Street, downtown. It starts at 7 p.m. I believe we're going till 10, and we're just hosting the results live streamed. We'll have some food and beverages for people. But yeah, you can stop by and talk to us.
And that's at Gordon's on 6th Avenue.
Yes, 6th Avenue.
Sorry.
You know.
You know, just the main street in Kenosha.
That's downtown one.
Well, I want to thank you both so much for being here. I have with me today Erica Ness, who's Director of Community Engagement for Leaders of Kenosha, and Ariel Crowder, who's Director of Digital Media for Leaders of Kenosha. And we've been talking today about Leaders of Kenosha and some of the work they're doing around social transformative and restorative justice, primarily in Kenosha, but I think they want to outreach to the state and the United States. So that's great. Thank you so much for being here. I've enjoyed talking to you today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. We love talking to you as well and sharing about our work. And again, if